New Hampshire is known for its mountains, its first-in-the-nation political primary, and its disdain for taxes. For NHPR's Only in New Hampshire series, Justine Paradise digs into New Hampshire's long relationship with the tax man.
This is Word of Mouth from NHPR, your questions answered, your state explored. I'm Virginia Prescott. The New Hampshire advantage is central to the state brand. We're all about scant regulations, limited government, and low taxes.
We have no state income or general sales tax. In that regard, we are not only number one in New England, we are number one in the United States.
That is Governor Meldrum Thompson's campaign song from 1976, touting what has become a point of New Hampshire pride. Resentment for the tax man has existed since, well, since taxes. The tax collector appears in medieval folklore. He surfaces as Robin Hood's foil, the Sheriff of Nottingham. Taxation without representation helped ignite the American Revolution. So is New Hampshire's tax aversion really so unique?
In a word, yeah.
That's producer Justine Paradise.
So New Hampshire is the only state without either a sales tax or an income tax, except Alaska, but Alaska gets a huge amount of revenue from the oil and extraction industries as well. So New Hampshire's tax structure is actually unique in the United States. And then, of course, there's the pledge.
The pledge is something that the people running for governor of the state take a simple pledge to veto any broad-based sales or income tax that the legislature might, for some crazy reason, pass and put on the governor's desk.
That's Joe McQuaid, publisher of the Union Leader in Manchester. Virginia, what do you know about the pledge?
Well, I grew up in New Hampshire, so I don't know that I was aware of the pledge, but, you know, no taxes was just part of what was going on. It was like, you know, the old man on the mountain and the fact that the Budweiser Clydesdales rolled through here every once in a while, which was really fascinating to a young girl. But I never knew that it was different than anywhere else. I thought, this is what everybody does.
Yeah, right. It's just what you do. If you're a Democrat or a Republican, it doesn't matter. Almost every serious candidate for governor in the past 40 years has had to make this promise that they won't even consider a broad-based sales or income tax. And just really quick, broad-based means taxing a broad swath of the population rather than a narrow sliver of the population like a cigarette tax or an interest and dividends tax, both of which New Hampshire does have.
But no income tax. That is something New Hampshire wants to own.
And there's a huge debate about all this. Some people say it's been working just fine. Limited government is good.
Yeah, the message is we're open for business, that we keep taxes and spending low. You know, your monthly nut is lower. You keep the state out of my wallet. It's kind of a pro-growth message for business.
Right, exactly. But on the other hand, our tax structure puts a lot of pressure on local property taxes. And some people question how it affects state social services. For instance, when it comes to the opioid crisis, New Hampshire has the third highest rate of overdose deaths in the country, but it ranks lowest in New England in terms of the substance abuse treatment programs per capita.
Right. This is something that comes up a lot, social services and education. But still, everybody seems to accept our no-tax status as a given.
Yeah, it's confusing, especially for someone who's new to the state, like our listener Mary Douglas. She moved to New Hampshire from Maryland in 2005, and she sent us a question about it.
So for this week's edition of our Only in New Hampshire series, Justine Paradise called her up.
Thank you so much for submitting your question. It's a big one.
I think my question was, why does New Hampshire seem so against having a state income tax? I've been aware of it since we moved up here. I became a teacher. Once we got up here, I went back to school. I taught at Beach Street School for 7 years in Manchester. And it seems like the schools always need more money and stuff. And I didn't quite understand why there's no income tax here.
Have you seen a kind of like rhetoric or a kind of tone that surprised you?
I can't pin it down to anything, but, you know, I just wondered why that is. It seems like it can't even be considered, and I wondered why. It may be something about the live free or die kind of thing. I don't know.
freedom pass you by.
I'm thinking it just might.
And lead this country on. Live free or die.
The last person to run for governor not to take the pledge was Jackie Silly.
This no tax pledge is turning our politicians into pledge zombies, all doing the same thing, not listening to anyone, and don't even try having a conversation with them.
What made you decide not to take the pledge?
Because I'm absolutely opposed to it. It's a gimmick.
Jackie Silly ran in 2012 as a Democrat, and she lost in the primary.
I refused to take the pledge, and I said it's time that we had a conversation about what we believe government should provide in the state of New Hampshire, and then who pays for it? How do we raise revenues to accomplish that? And I got painted immediately as, she's in there fighting for an income tax. So it's difficult even to have a conversation about it.
What do people say to you?
Brave was probably the biggest thing. I suspect folks on the other side of that debate said foolhardy. There are people who simply, they may have admired my position on a number of things, but they were people that there is no doubt, and I've learned that since that campaign, that just felt it was an absolute no-starter, that you could not win in a general election by not taking the pledge in New Hampshire. And I find that really sad.
For decades, almost every other serious candidate for governor has taken the pledge, Democrat or Republican. But it wasn't always this way.
My name is Arnie Arneson. I describe myself as a politician in recovery.
Arnie Arneson is a radio host and former state representative from Orford, New Hampshire. She lives in Concord now, and she's a big proponent of overhauling the tax system in favor of a state income tax.
I've been here forever at the Union Leader. I started here more than 50 years ago.
That's Joe McQuaid again, publisher of The Union Leader. To put it mildly, he does not share Arnie's views.
I think, speaking of DNA, we should make everybody in the state of New Hampshire take a spit test. And anybody who's in favor of a broad-based tax, they're going to have to go someplace else.
And finally, this is Brad Cook.
And I've been involved with New Hampshire public affairs way back since 1966.
Brad Cook is a lawyer, and since the early 90s, he's been a weekly columnist for the New Hampshire Business Review. It's called Cook on Concord.
Because it's supposed to loosely comment on what's going on in government and public affairs in New Hampshire.
Brad and Joe are actually neighbors, and they've both got offices in Manchester. Brad's in the corner office on the 17th floor of a downtown law firm. Joe's on the newsroom floor of the Union Leader on the outskirts of town. But both of their offices, and Arnie's house in Concord too, are decorated with New Hampshire memorabilia, black and white pictures of governors and political candidates and newspaper editors. All three of them, Arnie, Joe, and Brad, told me that you just can't tell the story of New Hampshire and taxes without talking about this one guy, William Loeb.
Well, before Fox, before social media, before cable TV, we had William Loeb. And William Loeb was the publisher of the most powerful statewide newspaper called the Union Leader.
William Loeb was, from 1946 until 1981, a pretty influential figure in the state of New Hampshire.
No media source in New Hampshire has the dominance that the Union Leader had when he was the owner.
It's hard to overstate. New Hampshire today would just not be the same without the influence of William Loeb. He was very conservative and one of the most powerful figures in the state for 35 years. And he got his fair share of national attention, too. By 1948, Loeb had bought and combined New Hampshire's two major newspapers. So the Union Leader was born. Loeb had a media monopoly in the state. But he didn't live in New Hampshire.
He was not a New Hampshireite.
He and his wife had a place in Massachusetts, but they were legal residents of Reno, Nevada.
But we were his political petri dish.
He ran the paper in a very controversial and colorful way.
And he always wore a bow tie or a bolo tie. After he realized that the national press was writing about him because he was such a flamethrower, that's when he decided to have an editorial every day of the week except for Sundays.
Three times I had editorials. One favorable, two unfavorable.
He was unapologetic. Here's Loeb discussing his editorial and why he thought black people are inferior to white people. This is from a PBS documentary on his life.
Let me put it this way. How come in all these years in a perfectly decent climate in Africa, they hardly even developed the wheel?
What's an example of his influence?
Well, the one that you're here for, the lack of a broad-based tax in the state of New Hampshire. I think William Loeb had a great deal to do with that.
Oh, he was absolutely against broad-based taxes.
He thought that the more money you give to the government, the more the government will expand and spend. Our cartoonists back in the day, we had a character known as Old Broadbase, which was a big money bag with big eyes and mother tattooed on one arm and bleed 'em dry tattooed on the other.
What would he do if he had like a pet issue or something that he wanted to happen?
He'd pound it every day, every day. He could take something and make it an issue. You wouldn't have heard of the pledge if he didn't keep pounding it all the time.
But William Loeb didn't invent New Hampshire's anti-tax attitude. The belief in limited government has deep roots. Brad Cook says it dates back all the way to New Hampshire's colonial constitution, written in 1776, right after the beginning of the American Revolution.
Our government is weak by design, diffuse by design. The people who wrote our constitution made sure we had a big house, a small Senate, a two-year term for governors, so that there wouldn't be a strong central government.
On top of that, income taxes in the United States are only about a century old. It was only after the 16th Amendment passed in 1913 that the federal government was even allowed to collect taxes off income. But when it was first proposed 2 years earlier, in 1911, New Hampshire rejected it. And when the amendment did pass, New Hampshire was the last state to ratify it. After the federal government, states started implementing income taxes too, but New Hampshire wasn't among them. As the New York Times reported in 1929, New Hampshire manifests small enthusiasm for an income tax. But that wasn't true across the board. In 1949, Governor Sherman Adams proposed an income tax, and in the late 60s, moderate Republican Walter Peterson decided to take on the tax code, which hadn't changed very much since the 19th century agrarian economy. There were a lot of old, creaky taxes on the books, like the stock and trade tax that would levy a tax on inventory. Peterson hoped to clean house, but in 1971, he also proposed a 3% income tax, which drew the ire of William Loeb.
In a way, the problem for Walter Peterson was Bill Loeb.
During election times, he would whack the candidates he didn't like and promote the candidates he did like in no uncertain terms, no varnish. He is famous or infamous for calling various presidents of the United States the number one liar in the United States. That would be John F. Kennedy.
Dopey Dwight.
That would be former General Eisenhower.
He allegedly made Ed Muskie cry, with some people credited with Muskie losing to McGovern.
John Kennedy, the night before the general election in 1960, had a big rally across the street from the Union leader. And Kennedy got up and said, "There may be a worse newspaper and a worse publisher in these United States than the Union leader in William Loeb. But if there are, I can't think of them right now." And William Loeb said, "He gets upset when a little old newspaper publisher in New Hampshire says, I wouldn't want him in a White House."
William Loeb had been propping up candidates and tearing down others for years, but none with more success than Meldrum Thompson Jr.
Live free or die. Mel said he was out haying his field one day and got off the tractor and filed for governor.
What was his slogan again?
Axe the tax.
Axe the tax. And somebody gave him an axe handle and he carried it around in his car. I don't think he ever committed mayhem with it. So Mel Thompson and Loeb were sort of kismet.
So Governor Peterson had been reforming the tax system and entertaining the idea of an income tax. And Thompson was saying,
"You elect me, that's not going to happen." We did, and it didn't.
It took three tries, but in 1972, Mel Thompson beat Walter Peterson for the Republican primary. Then he was elected governor. Mel Thompson was a very conservative, fiery character. He was notorious for inflammatory positions like suggesting that the National Guard carry nuclear weapons or lobbying for an oil refinery on the seacoast. Loeb remained a close friend and probably an advisor. They called each other all the time.
They were friends and they went mountain climbing together along with their wives. Gail Thompson and Nacky Loeb.
Even New Hampshire's state motto wasn't widespread until Mel Thompson's tenure.
The Live Free or Die song you've been hearing comes from Keep New Hampshire Number 1, a 45 filled with songs pressed for Mel Thompson's campaign for a third term in 1976. A lot of what is considered intrinsic to New Hampshire today comes from the era of Mel Thompson and William Loeb, and that includes the anti-tax pledge.
Well, yeah, did he invent the pledge, Loeb?
Oh, God, yes. Well, I don't know if Loeb did or Mel did. I mean, it's kind of a cocktail. And what is so amazing is that the ghost of Mel and Bill is still so present today.
What changed was momentum to change the tax system was halted.
Any candidate for governor would be asked, and if nobody else asked, we would make sure that our reporter asked, are you taking the pledge?
I mean, he'd want to know if somebody running for alderman in Ward 1 in Manchester was taking the pledge. Well, last I checked, they couldn't pass a bread-based tax, but he'd ask about it. Executive counselors who can't vote on a bread-based tax, he'd want to know if they were taking the pledge. I mean, it became something that candidates would say, just let's get it out of the way.
Hugh Gallon beat Mel Thompson, and Hugh Gallon took the pledge. So did John Sununu. So did Judd Gregg. So did John Lynch, so did Craig Benson, so did Gene Shaheen the first couple of times.
So it stopped being just a litmus test in the Republican Party. It became a litmus test in both parties.
It's just so well ingrained in the state that retired teachers from Maryland know about it. That's great. That's the best news I've heard all day.
But it's not like New Hampshire could never change. The last state to implement an income tax was Connecticut in 1991. It was the 41st state to do so, but it was a controversial move. At the time, some politicians promised property tax relief would also come along, but that didn't pan out. Now, Connecticut has both an income tax and high local property taxes, and it consistently ranks among the highest tax states in the country. For some in New Hampshire, Connecticut is a cautionary tale. And some say New Hampshire's tax system is working. Like Jared Walczak at the Tax Foundation in Washington, D.C., which rates New Hampshire as number 7 on its state business tax climate index. When I called him, Jared Walczak said that there is something to the idea of the New Hampshire advantage.
New Hampshire has the reputation generally as a low tax state, and that therefore it makes the state fairly attractive for investment and for people to locate their activities in. And the state has done well for itself over the years. If you look regionally, especially when you look at the demographics of the state, you know, you see a state that has been probably punching above its weight for a long time.
But back to our listener, Mary Douglas, and her question. The fact that it feels impossible to even discuss tax reform doesn't sit well with a lot of people, including Arnie Arneson. She's not sure about the idea that the state is working just fine without any broad-based taxes.
Working for whom? So the fact that we have some success, and we do, don't get me wrong, we also have the highest, we're one of the oldest states in the nation. So as we age, and as we claim we're working, let's start looking at the people that aren't successful. Let's start looking at the communities that aren't thriving. We're not a state without taxes. We're a state with some of the highest fees, the highest student tuition costs.
Arnie actually ran for governor in 1992, promising to enact a state income tax. She was the first woman to win a primary for a major party in New Hampshire and the first person to win a primary without taking the pledge since Mel Thompson. But she did lose in the general election. Later, Mark Fernald tried again in the early 2000s and finally in 2012. There was Jackie Silly with her zombie ad. Would you do the same thing again? Would you refuse to take the pledge if you ran again?
Absolutely. No, I'm totally committed to. As I said, I think it's a gimmick. I think it's an abdication of responsibility, and I think that the citizens of New Hampshire deserve to know. I mean, when somebody tells them, you know, that they will not support any type of broad-based tax, we ought to be clear with citizens and say what we're really telling you is that the state's going to continue to run on your property taxes, and those are going to continue to go up.
Jackie Silly said that she thinks it would take a serious initiative to pass a state income tax, and that it would have to come from citizens. But in the same year that Jackie Silly lost her bid for governor, there was a referendum on the ballot, proposing a constitutional amendment to never implement a state income tax. The referendum won 57% of the vote, but it didn't pass. It needed 2/3.
producer Justine Paradise, who looked into the origins of the state's no tax status for our Only in New Hampshire series. If you're interested in learning more about William Loeb, you can check out the PBS documentary on his life and legacy. It's called Powerful as the Truth, and there's a link to watch it at wordofmouthradio.org. And if you have questions about how the Granite State operates, whether you're wondering about construction on 93 or who's that guy in the statue in the town square, or what is the opposition to daylight savings time, anything you're curious about, you can submit your question to our Only in New Hampshire page at nhpr.org, and we'll get on it.